Sometimes it's easier to have a conversation about having a conversation first. So, for example, you might want to say, do you know what? I actually would like to bring flirting back first. Let's start with that, because we used to love that. It was so much fun. We used to go to events and we'd be flirting with each other and all of those kind of things. So, but it's awkward because you don't flirt with someone you've, you know, been through for the last 35 years.
Welcome to the Open Bedroom Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Kahlo. Welcome to conversations about open relationships, online dating, conscious uncoupling, and creating the relationship that truly aligns for you. Hey guys, welcome back. Today I have Allie Hendry with us. I actually saw her on Thruple Talk and was like, she's amazing and I need her to come on my podcast too. Allie is a certified relationship coach, relationship columnist for Diva Magazine, which if you don't know is the largest lesbian and non-binary publication. She's also the host of The Relationship Room on Pod Diva and a TEDx speaker on Survivor's Guide to Jealousy. So today, Allie and I are going to be educating you on sex and menopause. I was telling Allie right before we hit play, I know that because of the law of attraction and magnetism, a lot of you listening are going to look like me, be like me, feel like me, be in that same kind of life space. And when I look at my analytics, I see it's mostly women between 35 and 45 or 55. So we're either perimenopausal, we're going through menopause, and I know I am very concerned about my sex life and my body. So Allie, I'm so grateful to have you on today. I can't wait to lead us through this discussion. And here's the floor if you want to talk at all about you and what you're up to in the world.
Hurrah. Thank you so much for inviting me. And yeah, that's absolutely right. The demographic for perimenopause, when we first start to get those changes, is between the ages of 46 and 52 on average. Although for Black and Indigenous populations, it tends to be 2 years earlier. And there's been some newish research to look into the reasons for that. And then in terms of getting to menopause, which is as technical as measuring when you stop menstruating. So from the 12 months that you stop menstruating, that is when you are in your menopause. And that tends to be at the age of 51. It's that technical in terms of the measurement. You know, when I was approaching menopause, I was like, oh, I bet there's a test. I bet there are hormones that will tell us. And the thing with hormones is they love fluctuating. Mm-hmm. And so to actually have a hormonal test that says, yep, you're absolutely in it, is very, very tricky, which is why in a lot of medical tests, they tend to use men rather than women and then apply the results of men's, you know, outcomes to women, because men don't have as much of a fluctuation. So that's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. But the point is, the measurement is when you have not had a period for 12 consecutive months. So it sounds like your demographic is approaching in it or coming out the other end in some places.
Absolutely. So what are some symptoms of menopause? Other than the hot flashes that we see on television, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's an interesting one because So I'm based in the UK, and on the National Health Service website, it does talk about symptoms. Some of the things that I've read, some of the professionals that I've spoken to prefer to not use the word symptoms because it medicalizes something that is a natural transition for people who menstruate. It's something that happens very naturally. And so to medicalize it, to say there's something wrong, to say there's something that needs fixing, can actually take us into an area that can be unhelpful for some. Now, that said, some people want to call it a medical condition, absolutely fine. Some people will, you know, use medical ways of supporting them to go through menopause. And again, that's absolutely fine. I think we can change the narrative slightly though and talk about it as changes. You know, what are some of the changes that occur? And most of those changes are around estrogen, because we know that that is the biggest change that happens with people who are going through menopause. Estrogen levels start to lower to lessen, and eventually over time, and they go right down to 90% reduction. So that's a big reduction. And there are so many parts of our body that rely on estrogen. And so most of the changes that happen to us, with us, alongside us as we go through menopause, are because of those estrogen changes. So things like brain function, because of the cognition, things like mood and sleep, that's all in there. Bone density, that changes. Weight gain, because of the interaction again with estrogen and how, you know, things. I'm not a medic at all. I read a lot. I read a lot and I absorb a lot, and I am fascinated by bodies and how they work. And anxiety, again, that's another area that has this interaction with estrogen, because estrogen caps cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So if there's nothing to cap it, it can go through the roof. And one of the things that started to happen to me right at the beginning of my perimenopause is that in the mornings, I would feel a lot of anxiousness and a heavy weight on my chest. And it wasn't just because it was lockdown. I mean, that was part of it. It was right in the middle of lockdown. And I was at 51 when, you know, there were some of the bigger changes happening. So that was my cortisol spike in the mornings. And so looking at, you know, what's happening with my body, and I decided from the beginning to approach menopause with a curiosity mindset, which is easier said than done for some, because we all have different experiences of menopause. You know, how it impacts us is going to be due to environment, genes, lifestyle. So there are so many things that can impact our experience. And of course, some of those things we can control. I mean, the lifestyle stuff, there are absolutely some things that we can do differently, which we can talk about in a bit, that will support our menopause journey. So, you know, I'm in the 25% category. So people who experience menopause, 25% of us, it's pretty much just the end of menstruation, little else, a few other things. I do get hot flushes, and a few of the other, I nearly said symptoms then, a few of the other changes as well. It's very easy to say symptoms. Mm-hmm. So we've got 75% who experience more changes. And then of those, so only 19, well, I say only, it's not only to the people experiencing it, but 19% experience severe changes. So that in itself, I think it's worth looking at the statistics and saying, where am I? What do I need? I do a lot of work going into organizations and carrying out menopause training, because there are a lot of stereotypes and assumptions and myths that need busting around people who are going through menopause. And so when we look at that and we say, okay, 19% are going to have that experience, as opposed to the general thought that everybody's going to experience the hot flushes, everybody's going to experience the brain fog, the vaginal dryness, all those sorts of things. And in fact, talking of vaginal dryness, when it comes to estrogen, again, that's what is in charge of the consistency, and we have less elasticity because of the, again, because of the reduction in estrogen. So lots of things going on.
It's just incredible how much our bodies change to support us as we age, as we have babies, as our hips widen to have a baby. And I was thinking, I haven't experienced menopausal symptoms yet, but I can imagine it's the uncomfortableness, like when you're pregnant and you're full and you have this baby inside of you and you're like, I'm hot and I'm hungry and I'm a little irritable and I'm no longer, you know, excited for sex. And I'm not sure that that's true at all. I'm just thinking of like the symptoms that I felt personally being pregnant. And I wonder if, you know, all of a sudden it's like something is taking over my body or something is happening in my body that doesn't feel like I've always felt. And it's uncomfortable. But to your point, if you can look at it in curiosity and say, if my cortisol levels are spiking in the morning, what can I do to support my body so that I feel calm? Can I drink some green tea? Can I meditate? Can I play some soothing music? Could I take a supplement? I'm not sure what the options are, but I like your idea of approaching this with curiosity and kind of openness versus that like feeling closed in and my body's not my own anymore. Who am I?
What can my body do now? This is very much, and this comes out of me being a coach, because as a coach, I am focusing on helping my clients gain clarity on where they're at now, where do they want to get to, and what are the steps that they want to take and are manageable to get to those changes. And so if we use that as a model, looking at the past and comparing with the what you can't do and thinking about how sad is it and the loss, yes, of course you need to grieve those things. You do need to move through some of those emotions. Absolutely. Emotions are like tunnels. We have to travel through them. We have to allow them to be processed. So those things have to happen. And actually, if we're thinking about looking at curiosity, looking at how does my body work now, we reduce a lot of that anxiety. We take away the comparison piece, which we're surrounded by, let's face it, and we move into, okay, what is the art of the possible? Where am I at right now? What can I do that supports me? And with the cortisol spikes, mine was very much mindfulness that supported me. I decided to use breath. I decided to use thoughts. And throughout that time, and it lasted for about 4 months, throughout that time, as soon as I woke up and I felt this pressure on my chest and this spike, this cortisol spike, I breathed in love and I breathed out peace. So not only was I supporting myself and bringing in my own self-love, I was also sending out and connecting with others with that peaceful journey. And that just really helped me. Those of you who are not into the woo-woo, switch off now, turn away now. This stuff works for me. I mean, there is so much power in the brain, and I see it all the time with my clients when they come to me and they want those changes. You want those changes. Those changes are in your cells. Those changes are in your thoughts and your feelings. You can see them. They're yours. No one else is seeing them. They're yours. So what we can do is say, well, what's getting in the way of that? How can we move to that place of ease through exploring what's happening right now? Where are you going to go? I believe in you. And what can we do to move into those new spaces together with the things that are possible to change? Of course, not everything is possible. Let's look at the possible.
I love that. So, how does menopause affect intimacy? Because that would be my number one concern. Like, will I still want to have sex? Can I still get lubricated? Will my partner still want me? Will my scent change? Like, what happens when your hormones so drastically change?
Absolutely. And all those things could happen. And all those things could not happen. And which do we tend to focus on? My biggest fear was my sex life is going to nosedive. I'm going to lose my desire. And, I was in a flush of wonderfulness, non-monogamous, having some amazing experiences with some beautiful people. And I was saying, I don't want to lose this. I don't want to approach menopause and to just feel that I don't want to. I don't want sex. I don't have that desire. There are so some of the ch you know the changes, again, going back to the things that happen, those changes, we have got body changes, we have got weight gain. For me, in the space of a couple of months, a menopause muffin decided to attach itself to my stomach, and I put on a stone. And I wasn't doing anything different at all. And what I've done as a result of that, I mean, I'm absolutely fine with it. I do have size privilege already. I recognize that I have privilege. In terms, putting a stone on is not taking me into any kind of discriminatory place. So I totally accept the privilege that I have in terms of my size. It was a change. And I was, and this is the paradox, I was in such a great place with my body. In my 30s and 40s, I'd sort of, or early 40s, I was a bit like, and 20s even to an extent, just not entirely comfortable. And by the time I got into mid 40s, I was like, this is us, you and me, kid. This is us together. We've got this. And so just as you start to really accept your body and go, this is my lot, I've done all the things and I am being healthy in a way that works for me, your body changes. And so that can be that can really hurt, and it can be difficult, and it can make, you can feel insecure. You can feel that your self-esteem changes. So this is where self-care, investing in you, looking at what you want to do differently, is paramount. And for me, I looked at what I was doing in terms of my moving with intention stuff. So I was doing a lot of running, I was doing a lot of yoga, and I decided to change things. And I've loved it because it made me look at what I was doing. I'm still doing the yoga, but I've moved into Pilates, doing a lot of reformer Pilates, which is lying on the floor and pulling on leads and levers and all sorts of weird and wonderful SNME type stuff. I love it. And then the other thing is starting to do spin classes. So moving from running into spin, which I've been doing for the last 6 months or so. The weight hasn't gone, but my relationship to my body has changed. I've been like, wow, you can do this. Oh my gosh, you actually cycled an extra mile today. Look at what you're doing. Look at how you're increasing your fitness. So I've realized that the way that we, our bodies, you know, respond to moving with intention stuff and exercise changes again because of the place of estrogen. And so what you're left with is that acceptance piece. You know, when they say about how can I bring peace into my life? I need more peace. I need more ease. Do you know where that comes from? That comes from that acceptance piece. Oh, it's so hard. Sometimes it's so hard. So looking at those things, exhaustion, anxiety, brain fog. Now, interestingly, of course, these things always get labeled as, oh, menopausal, oh, you're menopausal. Some of these things can be attributed to aging, because people who don't go through menopause also experience exhaustion, anxiety, brain fog, weight gain. Those things happen as a result of aging. So sometimes we are unfairly, you know, these things are lumped together and called as a result of menopause. Yes, to an extent. And also, yes, because, you know, you've been on the planet for a few more years. Other things that can come up are around social stereotypes of being useless. You know, you mentioned having children and childcare, and this is what the evolutionary psychologists say. It's no mistake that as your children start to get more independent and indeed start to leave home, you come back to you. You know, you are unable to produce more children, which is a good thing because you are in that next season. That's how I see it, you know, for some of us, that can be a good thing. Having children later in life, we know medically, can bring a lot of disaster. And so the body says no. However, society says, what's the point of having a womb and a uterus so that you can produce, so that you can have babies? So what's the point of me now if I can't do that? It desexualizes us, it because we live in a patriarchal society. It takes us into this space of you're not needed anymore. And it desexualizes us. And yes, there are some changes, as we've said. If penetration is your thing, then penetration can become more painful. So again, you start to look at, what do I need? You know, there are things that you can use for that. I've always been a big fan of lube anyway. Why wouldn't you be a fan of something that has been developed for your pleasure? Because we know, if you start to look into how the body works, getting wet isn't always the sign that it's supposed to be. You know, it doesn't always come when it's supposed to come. Sometimes it comes, you know, at times when it isn't supposed to. So it's one of those immeasurable things. It's going to come or it's not going to come. So using lube, I think we need to take shame out of that. I really do, because it's great. It's a resource.
You have said so many things, and I'm just like chomping at the bit to go back to a few of them. I love the lube conversation. My listeners know I'm a huge fan of coconut oil. We use organic coconut oil. We buy it at Sam's Club in bulk. And then we have two little containers with lids that just go on either one of our bedside tables. So it is always available. Coconut oil is amazing because you can use it as massage. You can use it for self-pleasure. And we always, 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 always use lube. One of the gals that comes on frequently to my show, her name's Sierra Booker. We do a lot of conversations around anal and sex stuff and tips. And she's been in the space for like two decades. And she's actually, it can't be that long because she's about to turn 30. So one decade. And she talks a lot about tiny little tears in the vagina and what can happen if you don't use lube. So I agree with you. Everybody use lube. Let's normalize using it. It is so much more pleasurable.
Yeah. And if you take one thing from this,
it's not a big deal. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I've just interrupted you.
No, go ahead.
If you're going to do anal, you need lube. You
Yes,
just need lube.
God, please.
Fact. Full stop. No
Fact.
discussion required.
I like that you just gently brushed on the penetration aspect and you said if that's for you. And I've noticed as I've done more girl on girl play, you know, female on female play, I'm noticing that I don't always go for that. Like it's a lot of fun to use toys and to stay on the outside. And there's so many nerve endings and so many fun things that you can do with a vulva that don't even require penetration. So as your body is moving into menopause and maybe your uterine lining is a little thinner, things are feeling uncomfortable, play around with all kinds of other ways to orgasm and to have fun and play in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. When we talk about sex, we always talk about pleasure. It's like sugar and spice. Mm-hmm. And pleasure is senses. Pleasure is tuning in to each of our senses. Now is such a brilliant time to look at what brings you pleasure. It's such a brilliant time to start to explore what does intimacy mean to you. And that can be so many things to so many people. Intimacy could be holding hands on public transport. Intimacy could be giving each other a foot rub at the end of the day. Intimacy could be cooking a meal. Intimacy could be lying on bed naked, holding each other skin on skin. There are so many different things. So now is a really good time to look at it because our bodies are changing. We need to be able to identify what's going to work for us. And this is things like looking at your desire levels. So we know from the research that there are two different types of desire. There's responsive desire and there's spontaneous desire. And what we see in the movies is the spontaneous desire, the stuff where you're ripping off the clothes and, you know, want, which is great and lovely. And there's also other types of desire that are also great and lovely, which are more about responsive. So it's curating that environment. It's some people need to feel safe before they engage in something sexual. Other people don't. They get the safety from doing the sexual thing. So, you know, these are all conversations that now is a fantastic time to look at what turns you on. Mm-hmm. What do you need? What things do you want to try? Is it kink? Perhaps kink's been something that you want to explore. Perhaps porn, ethical porn is something you want to explore. Perhaps you want to start talking to each other about fantasies. That to me is still sex. You know, we have this word, which I think is very divisive, called foreplay. And somebody's foreplay is someone else's sex. Mm-hmm. Anything can be called sex nowadays, which I love. Mm-hmm. We need to get away from penis and vagina being sex, particularly when we know the stats about things like the orgasm gap. And the orgasm gap says that actually when we look at the stats of who is having orgasms, the person who is having the least orgasms, and I'm going to use male-female here, so I am bringing it down to body parts, moving away from gender, and I do that with a caveat that I'm not intending to exclude people who are non-binary and people who are trans folk. I'm going to the research around this, and what the research says is that females who are in a relationship with a male have the least amount of orgasms. Females in relationships with females have the most amount of orgasms. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this is to do with penis and vagina. So thinking about actually, if you are heterosexual and you're in a relationship with a man, then you're not always going to come from penis and vagina. In fact, that's probably the last way that you're going to come. You're probably more likely to come from them going down on you or using their fingers. So it's worth having, and I know this is awkward. And what I would say is if you are having conversations for the first time and you've been together for you know, 15, 20 years, and you're like, oh, I really want to have this conversation because what we've always done doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work anymore. We need to bring in some changes. And what I find, and you know, when I'm working with my duos, I do work with duos, I work with individuals as well, is sometimes it's easier to have a conversation about having a conversation first. So, for example, you might want to say, do you know what? I actually would like to bring flirting back first. Let's start with that, because we used to love that. It was so much fun. We used to go to events and we'd be flirting with each other and all of those kind of things. So, but it's awkward because you don't flirt with someone you've, been through for the last 35 years. So if you start the conversation by saying, "Hey, how would it feel to have a conversation about flirting?" That's your way in. That's your precursor. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a bit stupid, but yeah, okay, fine. Let's just do it. Okay, fantastic. Do you know? And then you start with you, because that's the best place to start. I really love it when you, not I love when you used to. Remember what we said about being in the past? Let's be in the present. Let's be in the present and in the future. I really love it when you just stroke my arm. I really love it when you just brush my bum when I'm doing the washing up. I really love it when you give me that look, that look just before we're about to go to bed. So those are the, I'm getting tingles with that one. I just literally got tingles. I turned myself on. I mean, I do that a lot anyway. I literally turn myself on. So, these are things that we can have, and you may need support. You absolutely may need support. This, again, this is a great time when we're going through those menopausal changes to resource yourself, people. Find the Facebook groups. Find the support groups, the counselors, the therapists, the coaches, if that is part of you, if they are inaccessible to you. A lot of them have group programs. I do bursaries for queer intersectional women, so free coaching. So look at what you feel will support you. Start talking to people. You mentioned law of attraction earlier on, talking, manifesting, working out exactly what you want so that you start to draw it towards you.
Again, so much is going on in my head right now. Two different directions that I think you could use to approach your partner about needing to change the way you're being intimate. And one is, I have had quite a lot of conversation on the podcast about faking orgasms. And it's tricky because you don't want to necessarily tell your partner, it's just, what you've been doing hasn't been working for 10 years. I've been faking. So what you could use instead is this change in your life to say, I'm noticing that my body is changing. And I'm noticing that when we do these certain things, I really enjoy that. So I would love if we maybe shifted a bit more into this other thing that's really working for me as my body changes and we can support our intimacy better. That could be one way. Another way is, I'm listening to you, I keep thinking about the erotic blueprints. Allie, have you done your erotic blueprint quiz?
I haven't,
You haven't? You
no.
sound like an energetic to me, because as you're
Oh.
talking about the energy and the flirting and the brushing against your bum, it's all this like tingly, energetic connection that's turning you on and getting you excited. And so, another great way to have a conversation like this is to say, I would love for us to do our erotic blueprint quiz. It's kind of like the Gary Chapman's love languages, but it's for sex. And it tells you how you as an individual need to be approached to be open and excited about sex, how you feel sexually fulfilled. And partner, lover, I want to know yours too. I want to know, let's learn, let's do this together. And that's a great way to then figure out, these are things I'm really leaning into. And as you're changing and you're evolving and you're going through menopause and penetration may not be something that's really interesting to you anymore. I love that you mentioned kink. Kink is one of the erotic blueprints. And I have several friends that are doms or dominatrixes that say, I don't even have sex. We just do a lot of kink and that gets me off in itself. I need the mind fuckery, or I need the physical impact, or other people that are more into sensation and senses, and they don't even need penetration, or the energetics that can have an energetic orgasm. There's so much play in intimacy that we can have that I think is available to us all the time, and we forget because society says sex is PNV. And if you don't have that, then you're not having sex. You're
Yeah.
not actually being intimate, which is ridiculous.
It is. It is. And if you have the resources for it, think about going to a sexological body worker. What sexological body workers do is they will work with you. They work with duos, they work with individuals, and they will help you to reconnect with your sexual self in a way that works for you right now. So they will be able to help you explore your pleasure journeys and things like that. So I love what you're saying. Just that curiosity of what now? What, where are we at right now? What's going on? And you can look at things like love language. You can re-look at those sorts of things and say, what's coming up? What, how do I feel loved by you? Because I need to feel secure before I'm intimate with you. You know, that might be someone's story. And if that is, then what's before that? What helps with that safety and that security feeling to feel loved? Okay, great. What does that look like? What do you need? What would you need in that situation? You can look at things like, we have sexual designs now. We have so many languages, new words coming up. So perhaps you're exploring that you're aromantic or you're demisexual or you're sapiosexual. So having a look at the words that are out there now that help us understand our own identities that we can then share with our partner or partners and help them help us move into a place that works for us. What's your attraction style? That's always a great question. So are you more of an aesthetic person? Is it the looks? Do you need something curated? It needs to look beautiful. Is it smell? Have you got olfactory attraction? Is it romantic attraction, physical attraction, emotional attraction? Just knowing what it is that turns you on, and again being able to share that. So there's a lot out there. Define sex, basically. Tell each other what you think sex is. And it's always a great thing to do it on your own, and then, well, you can do it on your own, but define sex on your own and then come together. All these double entendres I'm throwing out right now. So what I'm saying is, write it down independently or do a voice note and then listen to each other's area and allocate that time. Don't be rushed at it. You know, this is part of you coming together, as it were. And I think if you're in a partnership and you're going through menopause, see it as a shared journey. And this can work on so many changes that you could be going through, or your partner or partners can be going through. See it as you two team members working through this other thing. And I talk about that when I do my Survivor's Guide to Jealousy, you know, when I did my TED talk. It's the two of you working on jealousy, because as soon as you bring in blame, shame likes to climb on board. Well, it's you're going through it. I don't know what to do. It's nothing to do with me. It's absolutely something to do with you, because we're in partnership. We're collaborating on this, babes. We're in this together. So we need to find ways together that work for us with menopause. I did this show in 2020 called Lesbian Guide to Straight Sex. It was on Channel 5 over in the UK. And what we did is we set tasks for heterosexual couples. There were four of us, four lesbians, who were setting tasks to help people improve their intimacy. There was this one couple, and they were going through the woman was going through menopause, and so together we were setting these challenges, and I set them a tantric sex challenge, and for them that absolutely worked. They went to tantric sex, and it joined and united them in a way that was so powerful and just revolutionized their relationship. And what they used to say is, we call menopause Lady M. So we've actually created this character outside of our relationship. You know, there's us together partnering, and we've got Lady M that we're dealing with, this third person in our relationship. And by that very thought process, that mindset shift, it helped them. It made them collaborate and work together on this. So any of those ideas that are resonating with you, just play this podcast, people. Listen to this podcast. If you're listening to it now on your own, right? Go and listen to it again with your partner or partners, and then go for a walk or whatever works for you in terms of moving with intention together, and have a conversation about what's coming up for you.
I love this, because that was going to be my last question. As a partner, how can we support our people going through menopause? And as you told this story, one thing that came up for me was, I currently have a podcast airing on menopause with Dr. Alexandra Stockwell, and her co-author of the book that they just published, her name's Trisha. Her husband has been such an amazing support for her. And so a cute thing that they do together is, as she gets a hot flash and they both work from home, she'll make it kind of fun and flirty and sexy. And so she'll be like, Woo, I'm so hot. And she'll take her shirt off, and then he'll know, okay, I need to turn the air down. And so he'll support her by getting up, turning on the air conditioning. He turns the fan on for her, so she has a fan on her, and he just grabs a little wrap and wraps himself up, and he doesn't say a thing
I love
other
it.
than, what else can I get you? Do you need some water or tea or something? And I thought that's just such a sweet way to support our partners in something as simple as turning the air conditioner down so that it's cooler in the house.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that, again, it comes because of what's happening with us on the estrogen side is sleep patterns change.
Yes.
So look at your sleep environment, look at how much light there is, look at the kinds of sheets you're using, the material in the sheets, look at the temperature and go and have a look at what the recommended temperature is. We know we need to have a lower temperature to help us fall asleep. Look at how the bedroom is set up. So you are going to get thirsty. So making sure that that's accessible to you. All of those annoying things that you're in the middle of the night and you're like, why didn't I put water by my bed? Or oh, why can't I fling this cover off because it's tucked in underneath me? You forget them in the morning. So remember them now, people. Why not write a list of your bedtime routine and what happens during the night and look at those points where you're like, oh, I keep forgetting to do that. Bring ease in, bring your ease in. You can do this through changing some of those habits.
Bring ease in. This has been such a fun episode to record with you. I'm curious if our listeners are like, I live in the United States. How can I work with Allie? Is that possible with you being a coach? Tell us your offerings and how people can work with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of clients in America, actually. I run a certified ICF certified relationship coach training course. So I teach coaches how to become relationship coaches. And so from that, I do a lot of work in America, and quite often people, well, not quite often, sometimes people are on the course, they become clients as well. And so to reach me, and if you're interested in training as a relationship coach, then absolutely reach out to me. You can access me through my website, which is alihendry.co.uk. And I'm very active on Instagram, which is Ali Hendry Coaching. And from there, you can get to my link tree and you can find all the links to the Certified Relationship Coach Training course, a free try before you buy connection call with me, and lots of other juicy things that I'm up to.
Awesome. Fantastic. I'll put your links in the show notes below. So thank you guys for making it to the end of this episode. As soon as you're done, I want you to stop this, go follow Allie, and get a little bit more educated about this whole space. Thank you for joining us today, Allie. I hope you have a fantastic day or
Thank you. It's been an
evening.
absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me in.
Is wonderful. Thank you. Hey there. Did you know that I do online coaching? Yes, I do online coaching in the sex and relationship space. Some of the topics that are near and dear to my heart are open relationships. So that includes polyamory, swinging, or what we call the lifestyle. I also love conversations around online dating. We're talking Bumble, Tinder, Field, and more. And then the last thing that's really passionate and close to my heart is conscious uncoupling. That means we get to break up with people with love and respect, with dignity and hope. We get to create a life for our children that gets to be a little bit different. We can do things better than we have in the past. So if any of these topics sound interesting to you and you'd love to get some coaching from me, check out the link in the show notes or the link in my bio for more information on coaching with Jen.